Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Ted Koppel is with us to begin this hour. He has a new documentary as part of his Koppel on Discovery series on the Discovery Channel. It's called Breaking Point, and it's about California's overloaded prison system, and by extension, I imagine, the whole country's unbelievable incarceration rate since the Three Strikes and You're Out movement began in the 1980s. This is coming home to roost now in tough choices for taxpayers and policymakers, as well as, of course, the implications for so many prisoners and their families and the prisons themselves. Since leaving Nightline, as you probably know, Ted Koppel is also an NPR commentator. And Ted, thanks so much for coming on WNYC with us today. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. You've done such an elegant job of summarizing the documentary, I don't have to say anything else.
All right. It's been great to have you, and best of luck. No. Let's jump right into this prison thing. What did you look at and why?
Well, the reason we focused on California is you're absolutely right. It's a nationwide problem. We now have four times as many people in prison as we did 25 years ago. I mean, I'll say that again. Four times as many Americans are in jail or prison behind bars today as were behind bars 25 years ago.
Just 25 years ago. Yeah, and you know, Ted, I heard a stat yesterday on, of all things, the McLaughlin Group, that America has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prisoners. That's astounding.
2.2 million people. We have more people in prison than China. We have more people in prison than Russia. We have more people in prison than any other country in the world. It's quite extraordinary. And so we focused on California, because as you correctly pointed out, in the wake of their passage of the Three Strikes and You're Out, people have a tendency to believe that, first of all, that law is only applicable after someone has committed three crimes. On your second crime, you get double the sentence you would have gotten before. Then after the third crime, it becomes 25 to life. And the problem there is, well, multifaceted. First of all, they have so many people in prison now that they are quite literally stacking prisoners like cordwood in gyms, in hallways. You've got triple-decker bunks in gyms where each man has effectively 6 foot by 3 foot of his own space. And it's costing an enormous amount of money. It costs the same amount of money within $200 to keep a man in prison in California for 1 year as it does for tuition, room, and board at Harvard.
Now, you know that there are a fair number of listeners right now who are shrugging and saying, yeah, but the streets are so much safer than they were 25 years ago, and this is one of the reasons.
And if that were indeed the sum of it, I would agree with them. It would still be a problem. But the real problem is these folks are all coming out, most of them. They come out on parole. And when they come out on parole, they're in worse shape than they were when they went in, because the prison system is so overstressed that they don't have any of the programs that they had. But, well, they still have some of the programs, but they have far fewer people able to take the job training programs, the alcohol training rehabilitation programs, the anger management programs. So when they come out, what most of these men and women have learned is how to be better criminals. And when they come back into your neighborhood, and that's exactly where they come. I mean, the irony of the parole system is they must, under California law, be paroled back to the place where they committed the crime in the first place. So given the fact that they were probably hanging out with bad elements when they were arrested in the first place, by sending them back to the very place where they got into trouble, you're increasing, not decreasing, the chance that they're going to end up in prison again.
You went to one particular prison in California. Was it called Socalon? I'm not familiar with it.
No, Solano.
Solano, I'm sorry.
Solano,
and
that's all right.
And found, among other things, 3 to 4 race riots a year. Now, again, people not familiar with the prison world will wonder, how does that happen in a prison where supposedly people's movements are under law enforcement control?
Well, first of all, you've got to understand that the California prison system was built to house no more than 100,000 inmates. It now has 173,000. So for one thing, you've got far more men and women in prison than the prisons were ever designed to hold. You have fewer correctional officers. There are about 4,000 correctional officers short. And they actually, the California correctional officers, make a very fine salary. I mean, a guy who's been in for 10 years can expect to make about $70,000. And with overtime, and they make a lot of overtime, we actually ran into some of the correctional officers who were making up to $150,000, $180,000 a year.
Still a rotten
Nevertheless,
job.
Well, it's a terrible job, but they're understaffed. And they are so understaffed that they actually encourage the gang members to stick together. So they put the Crips with the Crips, the Bloods with the Bloods, the Northern California Hispanic gangs with the Northern California Hispanic gangs and the Southern, so that the gangs are, in effect, maintained in prison as a means of trying to establish some kind of control. What that means, of course, is that the people controlling the place are, much of the time, the inmates, not the correctional officers.
Ted Koppel, my guest on WNYC, talking about the new documentary in the Koppel on Discovery series on the Discovery Channel called Breaking Point, about California's overloaded prison system and, by extension, the whole country's. And when is it on, by the way, before I forget to let you give the plug?
You're very nice. Next Sunday at 9.
Did you happen to look at, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know, the so-called prison industrial complex? Because I've read that at the time of the three strikes and you're out law wave, there was the prison construction industry spending a lot of money on lobbying for these things, because obviously they would get a lot of business from it. Did you investigate that at all?
Well, as a matter of fact, because the federal court stepped in California and said, either you guys are going to do something about it or we're going to do something about it. And the great fear is that about the only thing the federal courts could do would be to order the release of 10%, 20%, some arbitrary number, percentage of the prisoners. Governor Schwarzenegger and the California Assembly have passed a $7.4 billion spending package to fund, I think it's going to add about 50,000, 53,000 beds and some rehabilitation programs. But obviously, that's going to take years.
So do you pose particular policy choices that you think are facing California or the nation as a result of all of this?
Well, I mean, here are some of the choices they face. They can either build new prisons. They can try and move prisoners out of state, and those things are being resisted not only by the prisoners who want to be close to their families, but also by the Correctional Officers Union, which is a very, very powerful union in California. They don't want to lose jobs. But one of the ironies is they actually, we have a segment of an ad campaign that ran in the California prison system, where you've got prisoners down in places like Tennessee, for example, sort of displaying their cells and saying, here, take a look, we've got a real fine cell here, you know, only two bunks in here, lots of room. You know, whoever has the best cell or the best unit, we get pizza on Saturday nights. They're doing a promotional campaign to try and convince some of the California prisoners to permit themselves to be moved out of state. And those prisons out of state are being run by private companies.
I know we just have about 3 minutes left, and I want to just mention briefly your previous documentary on Discovery Iran, The Most Dangerous Nation, and relate it to something in your professional history, because a lot of people might be too young to remember that Nightline began, really the precursor to Nightline was America Held Hostage, beginning in 1979 when the U.S. hostages were taken at the embassy in Iran. And there's a criticism of that that people have had over the years, which is that for all the great journalism on Nightline and the high standard that you set for network journalism, that America Held Hostage set the precedent of the one big story to the exclusion of other things, which gave us today's tendency for the networks to do that, sensationalizing even a story as important as that and giving us an unnecessarily polarizing view and unnecessarily myopic view of what's important in the world. How do you look back on that?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's an element of justice to that kind of criticism, but I would point out two things. Number one, until ABC News started doing that at 11:30 at night, there was no program, no news program on at 11:30 at night. It's not as though we took away time from other valuable stories to do that. The focus was on this story was perceived as being so important that ABC News started doing specials on that particular subject night after night. That's what America Held Hostage was. And it was only when the response to those specials was so overwhelming that so many people were watching that the people who ran ABC News at that time, Roone Arledge and his colleagues, decided, you know, we have room here for a permanent broadcast. And as soon as it became permanent, we didn't focus only on Iran anymore. We focused on any number of other subjects, quite literally thousands of subjects over the years. And the focus was that subject. Once a night, we were going to devote half an hour to what we thought was the most important issue of the day. One other point, Brian, and that is that I think there's a difference between focusing half an hour on a subject as important as 52 American diplomats and Marines and CIA officers being held hostage in a U.S. embassy overseas, which is the equivalent of a declaration of war. It was like an attack on U.S. territory. And spending, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours a day, focusing on, you know, pick your favorite non-substantive story of the last few years. I'm sensitive to what people are saying, but I really have no apologies to make for what that program was, or certainly what it became.
And Iran, the most dangerous nation. Did you win that Emmy last week? I know you were up.
We did.
Congratulations.
We did.
And I haven't
Thank
seen
you.
It, but are you beating the war drums?
No. On the contrary, the title was a deliberately provocative title to try and get people into the tent, but the title was essentially what the Bush administration, from the president on down, have been saying about Iran since he labeled them as a part of the axis of evil. The documentary, in fact, points out that just as we perceive them to be the most dangerous nation at the moment, so too they perceive us to be, and they have as much justification on their side, going all the way back to the overthrow of an Iranian prime minister who was freely elected, Mohammad Mossadegh, back in 1953, and the imposition of the Shah's regime. They feel they have just as many grievances against us as we feel we have against them. And I would say the thrust of the documentary is we need to back off a little bit on both sides and treat each other with the respect that each country deserves.
Ted Koppel, among other things, an NPR commentator these days, and his latest Koppel on Discovery documentary to be called The Breaking Point and air, I'm sorry, you said Sunday night at 9?
Sunday night, this coming Sunday night at 9.
On the Discovery Channel. Thanks so much. Great to have you on the show.
Brian, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the intersection between race and class in middle-class black communities with the author of a guest called Blue Chip Black. We'll also get her reaction to some of the things that Clarence Thomas said on 60 Minutes last night and play those clips. Stay with us.